Marcia, what happened?
Peter hit me in the nose with a football. I can't go to the dance like this.
Well, I'm sure it was an accident, sweetheart.
An eye for an eye. That's what Dad always says.
I never said that, honey.
Shut up! Got to teach Peter a lesson.
Marcia, eat a Snickers.
Why?
You get a little hostile when you're hungry. Better? Better.
Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
Jan, this isn't about you.
It never is!
Hey, Tony, pick it up. Aren't this whole row finished?
You know, I'm just not feeling the woodcutting thing today. I don't know.
Hey, Dad, what is the rush here? Is there like a worldwide shortage of gazebos?
Tony, eat a Snickers.
Why?
Because you eat a little bit whiny when you're hungry. Better?
Better.
Hey! My back hurts! Now my front hurts!
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
We're now being sponsored by Snickers. You might think we are, actually. This is a perfectly good candy bar. You actually won't find any of those in the Carter household, not with three kiddos all allergic to peanuts. But I share those commercials, because of the truth that Snickers has really hit on in that marketing campaign. You're not you when you're hungry. I know I personally relate really well to the Brady Bunch commercial because I know what it is to be hangry. When your hunger morphs into anger, it's one of the reasons why my family knows that we don't eat at restaurants with, say, longer than a 30-minute wait. Because I'll be in a perfectly lovely mood when we arrive and then sit down and wait, and then my mood just gets fouler and fouler and fouler until I finally get some food in my stomach, and as my blood sugar rises, so too does my mood. That's a chemical reality, though, right? I mean, there's truth to the connection between hunger and anger. In fact, the Ohio State University did a study on couples and found that couples are angrier and more aggressive towards each other when their blood sugar is lower. There's this biological component to it. I remember my dear friend Keith, when I lived in Central Jersey, he had a long commute up to North Jersey, and it took him about 90 minutes in just bumper-to-bumper traffic, both to work and from work. Think of 695 at 5 o'clock. His drive up to work, it was always very uneventful, but every drive home, it became an adventure because he got into 4 or 5 fender benders. And thankfully, nobody was ever hurt because he was only going 10 miles an hour, but came to find out he had been falling asleep behind the wheel. So after the 4th or 5th time, he finally confessed to his wife, and his wife made him go to the doctor, ran a battery of tests, and his doctor came back and said, "Keith, I gotta tell you, it's as simple as blood sugar. You're hungry." And so every day after school, when he would drive home, he would eat a granola bar or a thing of yogurt and never had that problem again. There's truth behind what Snickers is saying. We need nourishment to function properly. It's why the Mr. Bean commercial, why that's probably my favorite, but it points out that we can't even focus right when we're hungry. I mean, in a similar vein, they've conducted studies comparing affluent school districts with impoverished and struggling school districts, and they've proven that there is the impoverished school districts don't have children who are any less intelligent or any less capable than those in the more privileged districts. The struggle is the connection between poverty and hunger and a struggle to focus. It's why the work that ACTC does in our community is so important, why we can be proud of our Food for Thought participation, where volunteers so faithfully pack backpacks with food and then deliver them to local schools so that impoverished kids don't have to struggle with hunger throughout the weekend. Our nourishment matters. Without it, we get mean and cranky. We lose the ability to focus. We even lose the desire to work, as the Richard Lewis and Roseanne Barr commercial points to. We lose the energy and desire to do what we've been called to do, what we know how to do, what we're gifted to do. So it was no coincidence that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all agree that Jesus was most tempted when? Not when he was home, not when he was in his familiar surroundings, full and comfortable. No, they say Jesus was most tempted when he'd been driven into the wilderness. The wilderness. Now, that in Scripture is used as a pretty broad word. It can mean the wild, right? That isn't tamed. But it can also simply mean that which isn't comfortable, that which isn't familiar, the place where food and water aren't readily available. It's a place of need. It's a place of want. And in our lesson today, Luke says the Spirit drove Jesus into the wilderness for 40 days. Luke says he ate nothing. Now, did Jesus literally eat nothing for 40 days? I don't know, but I don't think that's the point. The point the Gospels try to make is that he was fundamentally famished. He was malnourished by this point. He was hungry for food, certainly, but he was also hungry for a whole lot else, for companionship, for familiarity, for relationship, for familiar settings. He was hungry for meaning and purpose again. He was weak and tired and lonely and hungering in so many ways. Yet it is precisely then, Luke says, that temptation found him. And we're told a devil, a power opposed to God, came to tempt him. Well, I don't think we should be picturing any kind of stereotypical devil with a pitchfork and horns, right? The point is that Jesus was tempted with the most palpable temptations we face in this world. He was tempted to doubt his identity, who and whose he was, and he was tempted to doubt his calling, the gifts he'd been given, and how he'd been empowered to use them. First, the devil says, if you are the Son of God, if you are who you say you are, then prove it. Turn the stone into bread. Now, you and I, we aren't challenged to turn inanimate objects into food, right? That doesn't happen. But this world does often try to get us to question our identities. If you're strong, then prove it. If you're smart, then prove it. If you're worth my love, then prove it. If you're worth my respect, then prove it. This world challenges our sense of self all the time, challenges our sense of masculinity and femininity, challenges our notions of beauty and what dignity really entail. This world is so good at tempting us to look away from the truth of how loved God says we are. This world is so skilled at having us think that we have to be a certain kind of tough or a certain kind of wealthy or a certain kind of straight or a certain kind of successful. It's hard enough to stand up to these claims when we're well-fed and well-nourished, let alone when we're hungry. But Jesus wouldn't take the bait. He knew who he was. And nothing anyone said or did could change that. For God had already made it clear once and for all at Jesus' baptism, you are my son, you are the beloved. With you I am well pleased. So the devil moved on. He moved on to two more similar temptations, offering Jesus great power and great privilege. He said, I'll give you great glory. I'll give you power over everything you can see if you worship me. Now, people and entities, they don't often come out and ask us to worship them. That's not the kind of battle we face. But let's not kid ourselves that we don't worship lots of different things in this world. We worship whatever it is we most revere. We worship whatever it is we most seek. That's who or what we worship. And we see it frequently, people giving up their very lives in pursuit of something, some ideal, maybe some goal, even a good goal. Take, for example, Tom Brady, perhaps the greatest quarterback of all time. He was a man lauded and praised for his greatness. Now, I don't often use sport illustrations, but I figure since this is about a patriot, I can. Brady once said, and this is a direct quote, "If you're going to compete against me, you better be willing to give up your life because I'm giving up mine." And he has. He has given up his life to the pursuit of NFL championships. He's given up what he eats and what he drinks, when and where he sleeps, the relationships he keeps. He's given all of himself to the cause of winning Super Bowls. And the world lauds him for it. He's rich and he's famous and he's deemed the greatest of all time because of it. But let's not kid ourselves that that's worship. When you give up who you are and what you do for a cause, well, that's worshiping a cause. But I don't mean to single Brady out. The truth is, we all do it. We all try and fill ourselves up on various things of this world. We all try to satisfy a hunger within ourselves that won't go away unless we feed ourselves with what matters. Because the truth is, no matter how many Super Bowls he wins, Brady's always going to want another. There's always going to be more that doesn't satisfy. You see, we all live in this state of spiritual malnourishment. We all fill ourselves up on the empty goals of this world that leave our souls still hungering for connection with God, for intimacy with family and friends, for a clearer sense of who and whose we are, that we might live this life with meaning and purpose and a sense of peace that nothing else in this world is going to be able to give us. We're all hungering, but we just don't realize what we're hungering for. So throughout the next 5 weeks of Lent, friends, we will be exploring elements of life for which we're all hungering, I believe, but don't quite realize it. Those things in life we all need and are actually longing for that will not only fill us up, but also help us be a light to those around us who are also walking around this world in a constant state of spiritual malnourishment. For the truth is, friends, temptations aren't that hard to deal with when we're well-fed and well-nourished, when our bodies and souls are nourished with what matters. For the more nourished and connected we are, the better we become at seeing all the ways in which God is already with us, ready to provide all that we truly need.